Hello, today is April 16th. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and we are going to start off with part one of the Pantograph. We will start out with Crime and Courts, Spotlight, and Top Story. Bloomington Police Department, BPD unveils mobile command, SWAT vehicles, by Caitlin Klepek, 17 hours ago. Bloomington. The Bloomington Police Department has added to its fleet a mobile command vehicle and a special response vehicle, which it says will improve law enforcement activities in the field. Both were unveiled Monday evening in the parking lot east of the Government Center in downtown Bloomington at the first of many planned public events intended to display these vehicles. The department said it wants the public to see police working in the community and where their tax dollars are going. This is the public's, you know, the community. It's owned by the community, and certainly we are not hiding it. We want our community to be engaged with us, Police Chief Jamal Symington said of the vehicles. The command vehicle, which cost a little over $72,000, resembles a small moving truck, but is outfitted with cameras, radio, and Starlink equipment. It will enable remote crisis management, police said, including monitoring events and seamless communication between dispatchers and officers. The $250,000 armored special response vehicle, similar to a military Humvee, is intended to provide greater protection of officers, victims, and bystanders involved in potentially violent special weapons and tactics operations, saving lives and preventing injuries, Symington said. The command vehicle also will provide a heated and cooled environment to get officers out of the elements, said Assistant Police Chief Chad Walmsley, who spearheaded the project. Though police have had smaller versions of this kind of vehicle, Bloomington officers noted that this multi-purpose vehicle will allow them to have more of an impact than before. The new Bloomington Police Department command vehicle is something we haven't had the ability to use when things are happening in the field, Chief Jamal Symington stated. He spoke of large gatherings, such as carnivals and music festivals, where a vehicle of this nature can help deter quote-unquote bad actors and allow police to be prepared for an emergency. We will use this throughout the community and throughout the year, Symington said. Refitting a truck formerly was used by the Bloomington Water Department instead of buying a new vehicle allowed police to save about $80,000, which allowed significant technology upgrades, police said. Converting the vehicle took about 6 months. The armored special response vehicle, which officers said is unique to the area, will only be used for SWAT operations, the chief noted, and will not be patrolling in the communities. I'm thankful to the community and council for supporting this opportunity, Symington, of adding the special response vehicle said. The assistant chief said the armored vehicle will provide police and victims a lot more protection than they've ever had. Before, police had a shield for about 15 officers instead of a vehicle that's built to withstand a violent encounter. We can get victims of crimes to a safer location on scene, Walmsley said. The special response vehicle was approved by the Bloomington City Council several years ago and was ordered about 4 years ago, Walmsley said, but the vehicle had been on back order due to the federal government's need for the same types of vehicles. The city paid for the special response vehicle, police said, and Symington noted the value of the vehicle has gone up since they purchased it. Officer said each of these vehicles will help to further their community outreach as part of the community engagement unit. In addition to using the vehicles for crisis situations, police intend to take the vehicles to community events to allow people to see and tour the vehicles. This may include Coffee with Cop events, the McLean County Fair, the Day of the Dozer, and other events where police would typically have drone and canine demonstrations. We would like the community to be able to see exactly what we have and to see where tax dollars are going, Walmsley said. Kids, especially with this special response vehicle, I mean, they just love to climb on stuff like that. Just kind of poke their head out of different ports and all that. I think it's a fun aspect for the kids, Walmsley said. In other news, Trump says that the Iran war is close to over. Pakistani general in Tehran to promote talks by Tala Ramadan, Eloa Eloi, and Himara Pamuk, 3 hours ago, Reuters. Middle East, Dubai. U.S. President Donald Trump claimed Wednesday the war with Iran was close to over, telling the world to brace for a quote-unquote amazing 2 days as the army chief of mediator Pakistan arrived in Tehran in a bid to prevent a renewed conflict. The diplomatic push came as U.S. and Iranian officials weighed a return to Pakistan for further talks after negotiations there ended on Sunday without a significant breakthrough. Israel expects a 2-week ceasefire agreed last week with the Iranians to be extended, a source told Reuters. Pakistan's military confirmed Field Marshal Assam Manir arrived in Tehran. A senior Iranian source told Reuters that Manir, who mediated the last round of talks, was heading to Iran to quote-unquote narrow gaps between the two sides. I think you're going to be watching an amazing 2 days ahead, Trump told ABC News reporter Jonathan Carroll, according to a post by the reporter on social media, adding he did not think it would be necessary to extend a 2-week ceasefire that expires next week. I think it's close to over. Yeah, I mean, I view it as very close to over, Trump said in an interview on Fox Business Network broadcast Wednesday. We'll see what happens. I think they want to make a deal very badly. Officials from Pakistan, Iran, and Gulf states also said both sides could return to Islamabad in the coming days. The talks last weekend broke down without an agreement to end the war, which Trump launched alongside Israel on February the 28th, triggering Iranian attacks on Iran's Gulf neighbors and reigniting a conflict between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon. Tankers intercepted. The U.S. military said it turned back more vessels, including the U.S.-sanctioned, Chinese-owned tanker Rich Story, which was seen heading back through the Strait of Hormuz on Wednesday. A U.S. destroyer stopped 2 oil tankers attempting to leave the Iranian port of Chabar on the Gulf of Oman on Tuesday, a U.S. official said. An Iranian supertanker subject to U.S. sanctions crossed the strait towards Iran's Khamenei port, despite the blockade, Iran's Fars new agency said Wednesday. Fars did not identify the tanker nor give further details of its voyage. While Iran and the United States appear so far to have avoided a major confrontation at sea since the United States began its blockade on Monday, Tehran says it would retaliate against military sanctions. Iran's Joint Military Command warned it would halt trade flows in the Gulf, the Sea of Oman, and the Red Sea, which connects the Suez Canal, if the U.S. blockade continued. Trump has also threatened to escalate if the war resumes. He told Fox Business Network, "We could take out every one of their bridges in 1 hour. We could take out every one of their power plants, electrical power plants, in 1 hour. We do not want to do that, so we'll just have to see what happens." Return to Islamabad. Trump told the New York Post on Tuesday that his negotiators were likely to return to Pakistan, thanks largely to the quote-unquote great job Army Chief Manir was doing to moderate the talks. Speaking later at an event in Georgia, Vice President J.D. Vance, who led the U.S. delegation at last weekend's talks, said Trump wanted to make a quote-unquote grand bargain with Iran, but there was a lot of mistrust between the two countries. Iran's nuclear ambitions were a key sticking point at last weekend's talks. The U.S. proposed a 20-year suspension of all nuclear activity by Iran, an apparent concession from long-standing demands for a permanent ban, while Tehran suggested a halt of 3 to 5 years, according to people familiar with the proposals. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said the length of any moratorium on Iranian uranium enrichment was a political decision, and suggested Iran might accept a compromise as a confidence-building measure. Washington also pressed for any enriched nuclear materials to be removed from Iran, while Tehran demanded that the international sanctions against it be lifted. One source involved with the talks said back-channel talks made progress in narrowing gaps, bringing the two sides closer to a deal that could be put forward to a new round of talks. Complicating peace efforts, Israel continued to attack Lebanon as its targets Iran-backed Hezbollah. Israel and the U.S. say that the campaign is not covered by the ceasefire, while Iran insists it is. Israel's Security Cabinet will convene late on Wednesday to discuss a possible Lebanon ceasefire, a senior Israeli official told Reuters after Israeli and Lebanese officials had held rare talks in Washington just a day earlier. In other Illinois State Capitol news, school cell phone ban is pushed. Illinois, by Sam Freeman, Medill, Illinois News Bureau, 3 hours ago. Springfield, after the Latin School of Chicago passed a cell phone ban, students, who typically would be glued to their phones on their way to class, looked up, interacted with their peers, and were more immersed in school, officials said. The Latin School of Chicago first restricted cell phone use for the 2024 and 2025 school year, and a year later revised it as a total ban during school hours. Since then, students recognize increased engagements both during instructional time and breaks. I'm grateful for the phone ban. I'll take a more connected community over the minor conveniences of a cell phone any day, Scarlett Gittleson said, the chief and editor of the student-run paper, The Fulcrum. As the Illinois legislature once again considers a statewide cell phone ban in schools, it looks to success stories like the Latin School to propose a bill aimed at addressing mental health and enhancing student successes. A push to regulate in Illinois. Illinois is one of only 8 states that have no statewide restrictions on the use of cell phones in public schools. An amendment to Senate Bill 2427, which passed the Illinois House Education Committee unanimously, on March the 25th, would require all Illinois public and charter schools to adopt policies restraining student use of cell phones, tablets, and other devices during class time. The bill still needs approval from the House, where it's not subject to a Friday deadline for final action because it was amended in the House. However, the Senate will need to approve the amended version before it can head to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who's been pushing for this measure for 2 years. There's a real harm being done, and it's interfering with our ability to give children the most productive educational environment possible. It's time to get cell phones out of the classroom, Pritzker said in his February State of the State speech. The line drew bipartisan applause. Under the bill, elementary and middle schools would be required to implement a bell-to-bell ban, while high schools could allow their students to use devices during lunch and breaks. The policy for high schools would vary according to the school district. Last year, the bill didn't receive a House vote due to concerns about enforcement and exceptions. The revised version includes a list of exceptions, including medical necessity, individualized education programs, and for English learners, accessing materials. It also limits disciplinary action, such as suspensions or expulsions, and it prohibits enforcement through fines, fees, or law enforcement action. If the bill is passed and signed by the governor, policies would need to be implemented by the 2027-2028 school year, but school districts that already have cell phone restrictions in place have until 2030 and 2031 to ensure their policies conform with the state requirements. Prioritizing academic success. Currently, 42 states and Washington, D.C. have laws or policies that either prohibit or limit student cell phone use or require individual districts to either ban or limit their uses. There are a lot of different states that have introduced this bill, and I think it's passed with a broad bipartisan support because they recognize the importance of banning these devices, with some exceptions, of course, so that way students are successful, said Senator Christina Castro, a Democrat from Elgin. These policies, though varied by state, are aimed at improving focus and reduce bullying. According to the Pew Research Center, approximately 72% of high school teachers say phone distractions are a major problem, compared to 33% of middle school teachers and just 6% of elementary school teachers. These distractions are proven to negatively impact student success and mental health. A 2023 survey of adolescents showed that 51% reported using social media for more than 3 hours a day. Social media use by adolescents is associated with higher rates of anxiety and depression, according to the National Libraries of Medicine. Social media use has become such a major issue among adolescents, with thousands and thousands of lawsuits alleging that addictive platform designs harm children's mental health. In a landmark court ruling in late March, Meta and YouTube were found liable on all counts of using addictive design features that harmed young users and created mental health problems. Moving on to a bright spot, Doctora honored for talent in business, writing, and cooking. Extraordinary Women by Caitlin Klepek, 3 hours ago. Bloomington. A 21-year corporate career at State Farm Insurance, the COVID-19 pandemic, and a family tradition for Chinese dumplings put author and entrepreneur Vivian Kong Doctora onto a path that led her to be an extraordinary woman. The Extraordinary Women's Project of Bloomington Normal honors one woman each quarter of the year, and Doctora was chosen as the first for 2026. Doctora is a co-owner of a Bloomington restaurant, founder of a business concentrating on authentic Asian cuisine, and a published children's book author, and an advocate in her community. I was shocked and surprised, Doctora told the Pantograph prior to the event honoring her on Tuesday, April the 14th at the Wesley Becker Conference Room in the Center for Health at Fort Jesse at 2200 Fort Jesse Road in Normal. I didn't really expect it at all. Sort of one of those things like, okay, cool, I'm grateful. My friends think that I'm extraordinary, she said, referring to the two people whom she believes nominated her, citing her perseverance among other factors. Doctora graduated from Illinois State University in 1996 with a degree in business administration and then worked for State Farm for 21 years, moving around with the company. In 2021, Doctora decided to leave State Farm in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic to open her own business, Bao Destination, a delivery-only food business, where she began selling handcrafted bao. The traditional Chinese steamed buns are filled with savory ingredients like pork or sweet ones like custard. I started making bao because I couldn't make sourdough, she said, laughing. During the pandemic, she had been giving a sourdough starter, but no matter what she did, she could not get the starter to do anything, Doctora said. She reminisced about her childhood, thinking about where and when her mother used to make bao, an all-day process. Doctora wondered if there was a way to make bao in a less complicated way and began researching. That's how I started making bao at home, and I couldn't stop, Doctora said. Every day, I'll be making a different version of it. Since then, she has opened another business, Beyond Social, a participation cooking class created with her partner in 2023 with the intention of bringing people together to, quote-unquote, do something fun. Doctora has also helped to establish Kobe Revolving Sushi Bar at 1500 East Empire Street, A1 Bloomington, as a partial owner. The honoree also spoke of her children's book, Life is Bao, which she described as a tale of diversity and inclusion, featuring a character inspired by Bao as well as different foods from other cultures. Bao moves to a new town and is judged on his appearance, but after making friends, Bao is able to change perspectives, allowing him and others to embrace diversity. The story is based on Doctora's experiences with raising her own children, 13-year-old twins, whom she said were often judged or bullied for looking different. I am very proud of them, Doctora said of her two children. They handle things differently, and I'm very proud of them how they handle certain situations. Inspired by her children, the businesswoman also co-founded the Young Entrepreneurs Market with CEO Plus Lab, and Doctora helped to launch Bloomington Normals, the collective entrepreneurs group in 2025. Doctora is also a part of the 2021 class of the Multicultural Leadership Program. Her other work includes serving on the TEDx committee following her participation as speaker in 2025. She was also recognized as a speaker in the 2024, that's what she said, and was an Athena Leadership Award finalist last year. I'm grateful and honored to be recognized because I don't do all of these things. because I think one day down the road someone's going to recognize me. I just do it because I enjoy doing it, Doctora said. She continued, I think we need to learn to just receive, right? Instead of, oh no, I'm not worthy enough. It took me a long time to do it, to also receive and say thank you. Doctora's full story can be found at www.theextraordinarywomanprojectbn.org. Once again, Doctora's full story can be found at www.theextraordinarywomanprojectbn.org. In other education news, we have a bright spot. District 87's David Mauser was named Superintendent of Distinction, D. Jack Alkire, 3 hours ago. Bloomington. The Illinois Association of School Administrators has named District 87's David Mauser the Corn Belt Region Superintendent of Distinction. Each year, 21 superintendents across the state's regions buy their peers for their leadership, communication, professionalism, and community involvement, according to their website, are chosen. I had no idea, Mauser said. It's always nice when you know you're recognized by your peers for what you're all collectively doing. Mauser took the head administrative job in District 87, leading to the 2022-2023 academic year, after serving for nearly a decade at Tri-Valley. It's interesting, though, because I'm at the latter stages of my career. So now, when I sat in that room in the past as somebody that was being mentored by folks like I think of Gary Tipsard, who was at Leroy, who was absolutely my mentor, and certainly Barry Riley here in District 87. It's funny now because I'm sort of in that place now as a mentor to younger superintendents, and I don't take it for granted, he said. Mauser often gives a piece of advice he wishes he'd listened to as a younger man. If I look back and I could give myself advice from years ago, it would be just to listen a lot more, to take it and to take your time, he said. That's what I try to tell a lot of young administrators too, is you do not have to make every decision right now. Running a school district is much like teaching is about building relationships, Mauser said. We can't teach a child unless they believe that you believe in them or you have a positive relationship with them. And so I think about it all the time. I was told early on as an administrator by mentors to me, it gets lonelier depending on, how far up you go, he said. And it certainly does if you don't go seek out those relationships. So our relationships now are different. Being honored as a superintendent of distinction goes far beyond his office, Mauser said. This award, in and of itself, without a doubt, I mean, it's tied into what we're doing here in District 87, he said. This is for the teachers and our students, as well as our community. Mauser will be honored at a luncheon hosted by the Illinois Association of School Administrators on April the 23rd in Springfield. How time flies. 100 years ago, on April the 16th of 1926, a transaction which is of interest and importance in the commercial life of Bloomington has just been consummated, whereby B.W. Dobbins and Paul Jefferson have purchased the controlling interest in the insurance firm of Freeze and Company Incorporated. Mr. Freeze recently moved to Miami, Florida. 75 years ago, on April the 16th of 1951, James R. Depew, Bloomington attorney, is now the chairman of the board of governors of Illinois Young Republicans. He was elected for a 2-year term at the state convention at Peoria. 50 years ago, on April the 16th, 1976, temperatures were headed toward the low 80s for the second day in a row on April the 16th, and weathermen continued to hold out hope for a break in the April drought, April 16th through the 17th. 25 years ago, on April the 16th of 2001. Need another reason to exercise? How about this? It's fun, said Chris Tuma, a runner, cyclist, and fitness instructor. A healthy body is a fun body. Not that you'll be laughing while doing laps, but many non-exercisers and even some exercisers forget that you're supposed to enjoy your workout. Because many Central Illinoisans don't realize that, and all other benefits of exercise, most of us don't work out 3 times a week. That's too bad, because some of the benefits can be realized almost immediately, no matter how old you are, said 3 Bloomington Normal fitness professionals. And spring, they say, is a good time to start or resume an outdoor or indoor exercise program. Many exercisers have a sense of joy after they finish each workout, said Tuma, who teaches a group stationary bicycle workout at the Bloomington Normal YMCA and works at Vatee's Cycle Shop and often running in Normal. Today's Flick Fact. Question. So why did founder G.J. Merkel locate State Farm in Bloomington? Answer. A farmer in Tiny Myrna, he told associates he wanted to locate his idea for a mutual insurance company in a big city. And to Merkel, read State Farm Archives, Bloomington was a big city. The 13th annual All In for Wesleyan raises a historic $3.6 million by Olivia Jacobs 3 hours ago. Bloomington, Illinois Wesleyan University made history Tuesday with its annual fundraiser All In for Wesleyan, raising over $3.6 million. The university's yearly goal is to raise $2.5 million with 2,000 donors, and they surpassed that by over $1 million and nearly 200 more gifts, with $3,661,361 total raised and 2,184 gifts. Last year, they raised $2,681 from 3,000 donors. That was the highest grossing 24-hour giving day in the history of giving days among higher education institutions in the Bloomington Normal area, according to Illinois Wesleyan's data. I know the Titan community is generous and invested because I see it in every alum, faculty, and staff member, parent, and student I meet. But this year's all-in for Wesleyan far exceeded our expectations, University President Sion Zinger told the Pantograph. But this year's all-in for Wesleyan far exceeded the expectations, and I often encourage Titans to do well, do good, and do more. The beauty of all-in for Wesleyan is that we get to do more together. Because we can do far more together than we thought possible. And I'm incredibly thankful for every person who decided to join us and make history. We'll be celebrating this year's all-in for a long time, he said. This year was also special due to the university celebrating 175 years. Various challenges were held to encourage alumni and community members to donate money for specific areas of study, sports, groups, and more. Leading the class year leaderboard for dollars raised was 93, with $271,625 raised. Women's tennis raised $50,937.24 on the athletics leaderboards. Nursing and health sciences came in at top of the circle, giving the leaderboard $11,350. And the council for IWU women reached the top of the affinity group leaderboard with $31,240.78 raised. Additionally, the school spirit cheer squad, dance, and mascot took the top of the athletic leaderboard for number of donors, with a total of 20 exceeding their goal of 10. Class of 2026 come at the top for donor count as well, with 80 donors. The Chicago Regional Alumni Chapter come in at the top with $47,614.13 raised, with the McLean County just behind at $38,670. Other challenges met included the $1 Million Student Success Challenge, the Class of 2001 Challenge, which matched dollar for dollar up to $12,500 to unlock an additional $10,000 as part of the Class 25th Anniversary. Thank you for listening, friends. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and until next time, we'll see you again with part 2 of the Pantograph. Have a great day.